If you are in your car right now, there is at least some small piece of your brain that somewhere is considering parking. Now, if you're lucky, you already know where you're going to park when you reach your destination. But the topic is a point of aggravation. And if you think that, you're not alone. It actually touches on a lot of other urban issues. And our contributing editor, Neil Milner, is here with some thoughts on that in today's edition of The Long View. And Neil, this makes sense when you think about it, but I got to admit, I hadn't thought about parking quite in that way as a key to a lot about life in the city.
Well, first, let me say that I'm parked at a meter, so I may have to leave this interview early so I don't get a ticket. Not true. I'm legally paid up, and there's plenty of time.
Good to know.
Yes, it turns out that parking has a lot of serious ramifications. You get a sense of it here. How the issue comes up and what it's related to. I mean, right now we have an argument over someone who owns streets and is trying to charge for parking, and that raises all kinds of stuff. You have the issue of where do you park when you have affordable housing? Do you as a incentive to developers, one of the things here is that you don't have to build as many parking spaces, and we'll get back to that. There's a huge one nationally, and this is just beginning to develop, with driverless cars. If you have driverless cars, you lose a lot of revenue if they don't use parking meters, and you lose a lot of revenue from not being able to collect overdue parking tickets. It's well over $100 million, let's say, in Los Angeles a year. So all of those things are like that. What Donald Shoup did, Donald Shoup is really the guru of reexamining parking. He's a planning professor, an urban studies professor at UCLA. He wrote a book called The High Cost of Free Parking a few years ago, and he became kind of a guru because he got cities all over the world to re-examine the conventional wisdom about parking and re-examine a kind of implicit pro-parking bias to say there are lots of costs that are involved. It affects sustainability. It affects development. It affects even the level of conflict in a place. And so now there is much more of at least a consideration of alternatives to having as much parking as possible, as much free parking as possible.
You know, there are some places, in fact, in Asia, I know in Beijing and in parts of Tokyo, if you are wanting to buy a car, they call it proof of parking. Mm-hmm. You have to show that you have a place to
park. A parking space,
before you buy it.
Yeah, there's a lot of assumptions like that. They vary by country. Right now, Amsterdam, for instance, is eliminating 10,500 parking spaces over the next 5 years. The interesting thing is there doesn't seem to be any conflict over this. Mm. And some of the ways they're doing this is that people used to have, if you had a permit to park downtown,
right,
when your permit expires, you're losing it. If you die, it's not like a Green Bay Packers season ticket. It goes to people who inherit it. It isn't inherited at all. You go and it goes. So it does vary. And the United States has been, I think, fairly reluctant to think along these lines. And if you think about why, there's a fairly obvious reason, right? The development since World War II and even before has been toward the suburbs. Mm. If you want to get people in the suburbs, this is true in almost any place in the United States, you want to get people in the suburbs to continue to shop in the city and try to save the central core, which they weren't always very successful to do. What do? You have to offer parking. And as people began to buy more than one car, parking became more of an issue. So it became not just a fringe benefit, but a necessity in the eyes of most urban planners to have sufficient parking inside a building for both workers and particularly for people who live in the high rises. You've driven around here. You can see the old buildings where there's way too many cars on the streets, right? These people are constantly driving around. The newer buildings, it's not the case.
The expectations, though, on the part of number one, people driving, but also it's an interesting point on the expectations of government, of the tax revenue that is represented by those parking meters. And, and certainly, you know, here in Honolulu, you've seen in terms of increase of charging.
That's right. And one of the things he says is that, look, I'm not telling everybody to eliminate all this parking. What I'm trying to get people to do is to think about the costs of offering parking because it's not free. And as I say, there's sustainability costs. There's a lot of energy that's used driving around looking for a parking space. People fight about them all the time. He says the conflict comes from the reptilian brain, really, where it's about territory. And so you lose essentially your self-control. And I think he's onto something there. But the important thing is to have some way to think about how can you incorporate this kind of thinking, which I'm sure people in Honolulu have thought about. I'm not telling the urban planners here. It just isn't that visible to the layperson. One of the things he says about parking meters, he says if you're going to have them, there are two things that you should do. One of which is to vary the charge for the meter in terms of the daytime. The heavier the meter is used, it's like these toll roads.
Congestion pricing.
Congestion parking. The more you charge. The other thing he said that has been very successful in getting merchants, let's say, to be willing to see their parking reduced is to earmark the parking meter revenue to a particular neighborhood that's getting impacted by losing parking. Oh. So they would promise the merchants, say, look, if we give up these spaces, we're going to collect this, you're going to lose this revenue, or the revenue that there is there, we will now give to the neighborhood for, let's say, redevelopment. And that's so that he's obviously not against all parking, although there's a great picture of him riding a bicycle. He looks like a professor at Oxford. It's perfect. It really is like central casting. But he's a very smart man. He's he's able to get people to examine what's conventional wisdom, and that's an extraordinarily difficult thing to do, so that parking is now looked at in terms of a cost or both a cost and a benefit. And I think you're going to see that increasingly thought about here. I don't have any formula to say how much we can reduce or how much we should increase, but that clearly is an issue. Clearly more of an issue as we build more in the urban core. Kapolei, not so much. There's plenty of parking out there.
And also not to always obsess about Oahu, because for neighbor islands, parking is an issue in a slightly different way urban Honolulu. But certainly going to that point that you say, that sort of a pro-parking bias or an assumption that, of course we need X number of spaces. Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
No, that's true. By the way, one of the assumptions that we've made over the years is that you subsidize parking, but you don't necessarily subsidize people who take the bus. My daughter works in Portland. Government employees get a bus pass, so that there is that disincentive. Otherwise, what you're doing, parking is another way to subsidize the people with money compared to people without money. On the other hand, if you don't have parking, you know, like, say, the buildings that are going to be put up around Kaka'ako and around the Ala'moana Shopping Center and up Keamoku, if you don't have parking, is there enough incentive for people who are going to live in affordable housing to have good public transportation, which would require perhaps rail to actually operate? Or are you essentially just writing them off? Is this another place where the people without money end up carrying the load?
Requiring a reimagination.
It is a reimagining. You're right.
And a reimagining of transportation.
Yes,
generally.
And I think we really have to reimagine Honolulu. People are not used to thinking of this place as an urban place yet, even though it's always been a city. But the kind of urbanization that's developing now, and part of it is to think about things like parking.
Neil Milner, thanks for helping that thinking along.
Sure.
He's retired professor of political science and contributing editor of our segment, The Long View.